This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. In the studio, as usual, with Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello.
Selamat petang.
And, of course, the man with the news, Mr. Arif Roos.
Hello.
As usual, the show is split into two delectable pieces. We're starting off with our news segment. We've got stuff about Nissan and what to expect from the NAP 2020 or the NAP 2020.
Yeah. Which is coming out this week.
And then, of course, we have a bit of a feature. It's the Mini Clubman S. How small and petite it is not. Right. Kicking us off, of course, the man with the news, Mr. Arif Roos.
Right, we have two pieces of news. One of it is talking about Nissan because they've been going through a lot of crazy stuff. The other one is the NEP, but I want to start with Nissan because
it's more interesting than the NEP.
Yeah.
It's a movie in the making.
It is. And it all begins with the Carlos Ghosn saga. We've covered that a few times, but basically, this guy, Carlos Ghosn, former CEO of Renault and Nissan, and who was credited for reviving Nissan back in the day, he was caught red-handed in a corruption case in a Renault-Nissan-Mitsubishi alliance. So he got thrown into jail. He paid a bail that cost 1 billion yen. He gets thrown into jail again, then escapes via a music container thing to Beirut, and then releases a public statement from Beirut stating that he's escaped injustice and political persecution from Japan. A few weeks go by and he says nothing, and then he decides to sue Nissan for unfair dismissal, in which he gets countersued. Then he most recently claimed that Nissan will go bankrupt in 2 years. All of this happened within a span of 4 months, so it started around about November. And meanwhile, at the Renault-Nissan-Mitsubishi alliance, more specifically Nissan, reeling from dropping sales. So Nissan themselves are planning to cut 12,500 jobs, with another 6,000 possibly coming. When the Carlos Ghosn saga happened, panic ensued. Nissan and Renault fires Carlos Ghosn, pledges to keep the alliance running. Then a new management was hired to turn the company around, in which they hired three new CEOs.
Because one's not enough, yep.
And then one of the three CEOs resigned less than a month later. And he's the guy who basically worked through Nissan since the 1980s and made this whole restructuring revival plan for Nissan. So a few days after that, Nissan released their financial report, and they said that their profits dropped by 85% globally in 2019. And the first steps towards this restructuring thing is, you know, like we mentioned last week, a lot of manufacturers are going through this EV phase. So they are cutting more than 12,500 jobs, and they're closing two manufacturing plants, with more motions underway for the old generation of directors to resign. But despite this, you know, the alliance of the Renault, Mitsubishi and Nissan is still continuing with the recovery plan. So what they've decided to do is Renault will take care or try to grow themselves in Europe. Then Nissan will try to do that in China. I didn't know Nissan was that huge in China. And then Mitsubishi will try to establish some sort of dominance in ASEAN. So they are going to be sharing platforms and research and development. But the wild ride of all of this, the Carlos Ghosn saga, I think everybody's calling it, is that Nissan stocks went down more than 19% for three consecutive years. So right now, the legendary automaker is worth less than Subaru, which is kind of crazy. But these days, they do remain quite confident because they're hoping for a US and Chinese market revival because they're releasing 8 new models this year in those markets, which is good. And they're so confident about that that, well, not confident, they're so sure of this return that the new CEO of Nissan, Makoto Uchida, put his job on the line if Nissan's future remains uncertain.
I've just got one thing to say with all this. You know, stock market going down, profits going down, everything seems down for Nissan.
Yeah.
But the price of a used Skyline in Malaysia is going up.
yeah.
Across the board.
Yeah, because you won't be able to buy one in a few years.
Exactly,
time, right?
Exactly. So it's a good time to go and get yourself a used Nissan Skyline and hold on to it.
But I mean, this is clearly the Ghosn effect, you know, the Ghosn effect, whatever you want to call it.
But even before that, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Richard, but, you know, they've not had a really good, solid new product.
Yeah.
They've not had something exciting. They've not apart from the Leaf, they've not played in the EV game strongly enough. Mm. Of course, they've got the NV200 van that's running as a taxi in the US and all that. But again, you know, for such a big manufacturer, and with their alliance with Renault, which has got a lot of EV cars, they should have shared a lot of things together.
Yeah, I mean, just rewind a few years ago to when you got a PlayStation, for example, and you bought Gran Turismo for the first time, and you played that for the first time. What was the one car that you looked towards buying in Gran Turismo, right?
Nissan GTR.
Exactly. GTR or a Z?
Or the R34 or whatever it was. Yes. You know, that was, and you could see that effect and what it had on their sales. And, you know, kids, you know, dreams of having a Nissan Skyline. Yeah. Yeah. And then those kids back then are now our age, Daniel.
Yes. You know,
and we are looking at this going, well, this is a company who hired this guy. And now can we trust their decision making, you know, on what they could do? But he got away with it for a
really
considerable
long
amount of time.
Yeah.
But you see, the younger generation now, I mean, Arif's age, their dream is to own an Almera and do Grab.
This, which is an honorable job.
Look at the Skyline dream is gone.
But the fact that, you know, this guy is just like, look, I escaped persecution, I did this. The guy messed up, right?
Yeah,
and he did. And everybody's not arguing that. The fact that he escaped in what, a music container? What's a music container?
You know, those big black boxes that they,
used to carry the drum set or anything like that.
They transport, like, musical equipment in it.
Yes.
He hid in one of those.
Yes. And in a plane.
It was an extra large one because of his size.
Well, I'd imagine it would have to be.
So it was a drum set.
He's clearly making a bit of a symbol of himself.
It's the same drum set as Def Leppard uses, you know?
Oh, my God.
But anyway, great story. But you know, sorry that they're having to lay off. It's an awful amount of jobs. Potentially because this one guy messed up. But like you say, they've not really released anything.
Nothing sexy.
We've all gone, well, I want one of those.
Yeah, I mean, even the most recent big products, the X-Rail, the Almera, they've supposedly been in the pipeline for years, and then we finally got Almera, but it's not selling hot, and then X-Rail's, 5 years old now?
Exactly.
These are the cars that they need to reintroduce again.
Mm.
All right, then. Gone's gone. Let's move on.
Yep. So
did they see that? That's good.
Yep. So the NAP 2020 is coming out this Friday evening.
And it's confirmed because I got an invite.
Yeah, really? Wow.
Double confirmed.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's a few things that we want to cover just before it comes out, mainly about what to expect. And actually, I don't really know that much about what the NAP covers. But
you're not on your own there, Eric. You know.
Well, it's a whole automotive policy for the whole automotive landscape.
So the NAP covers like policy, buying, selling, import, export.
Yes.
Traffic laws.
Taxations.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Everything.
For cars, for whether imported or secondhand, or we're talking about anything with wheels.
Okay.
Including motorcycles.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's an automotive policy in totality. So let's talk about what it should be doing for 2020. Number one, there should be something to talk about. Energy efficient vehicle.
Yep.
That has been going on all this while, but it should be enlarged further. It should be much more transparent how a car gets an EEV status, because with the EEV status comes a tax concession. Tax concession means cheaper price. Cheaper price, you can sell more. But you can't just hand it out. It's not just a sticker you hand out just to put on a windscreen. Now, the first car to get the new EEV sticker is the Proton X70 CKD.
Yeah.
Okay. My question, who did the testing? Who came up with the evaluation for this car to get an EEV status? We leave it to that for them to answer. Number two, there must be something about car scrapping. There's been a lot of talk about it. I don't think they're going to do car scrapping. I think they're going to allow old cars to remain on the road, but they're going to insist on every, say, period, maybe 3 years or 5 years, after a certain time, the car has to be inspected. Like they do in the UK, MOT. They do in Singapore, Viacom. I think this is very important. Maybe a basic check. And what's a basic check? Brakes, lights, you know.
All the things that keep you on the road.
Yes. And also,
keep you going.
And emissions.
And safe.
And safe.
Safe. If you have seatbelts, the seatbelts will be working. Some cars don't come with seatbelts because they're too old. But, you know, at least your lights, your brakes, basic stuff, your suspension should be there. We're not worried about rusty bodies. Rusty bodies are fine. But the car must be reasonably roadworthy. Because there are a lot of cars in the small towns and even in the city which are in very bad shape that need to be looked at. Next thing is self-driving cars. There will be a huge surge forward to work on self-driving cars.
In 2020, though?
Well, it'll start now. The technology has to start now.
Yeah.
It'll probably happen 10 years from now. Now, China has moved far ahead. Of course, in US, they've been testing. In Sweden, they've been testing. In Germany, they've been testing. But I think the Chinese are going to come up with a self-driving car that's workable much sooner.
Yeah.
Okay? And because they already have a village in China where the Pony Eye car company is running self-driving tests right now. It's running like a free taxi. So you can just stop it, just go anywhere within the village for free, and the car is driving by itself. So they're trying to see whether it can cope with traffic, with traffic lights and all that. But you see, if you watch the video on it, which you've put on DSF, it's very simple because the roads, this is a whole new village. So the roads already have sensors on it. There's already traffic lights talking to the cars, street lamps talking to the cars, curbs that are talking to the cars. So Malaysia,
they've built the village around the idea of the
car.
Yeah.
So if you're starting with a new city, you can do it. But current cities, not going to be easy. It's going to take some time. Then, of course, charging stations. With anything coming that's electric or battery powered, you need to have charging stations. Now, talking to a few people in the government that I've you know, gotten close to, implementing charging stations is not an issue. It's just money.
Yeah.
It's a chicken and egg situation. If they have enough electric cars coming into the market, fine. But the problem is now, even if you give electric cars at a tax-free price, they are still expensive.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two, if you have the charging stations that go with electric cars, how many people are actually going to think about using it?
Yeah.
You know, because why? Will there be a non-electric car parked at the charging station? Will there be
more than likely.
Will there be a motorcyclist parking his car there to go and use the facilities? This is the problem that Malaysians need to be re-educated, and, you know, there's some sense of common sense has to, you know.
And universal charges as well. You know,
exactly.
Universal
charges.
Yeah.
Just like with handphones.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
One charger for everybody. But ultimately, if you're bringing in new technology EEV cars, if this is the direction that the NEP 2020 wants to go, if you're talking about, introducing latest technology, like say the Golf E or the new BMW i3 or the new Mercedes EQCs, these cars have 300, 400, 500 kilometer driving range.
Yeah.
You don't need public charging.
Mm.
You can charge at home, you can charge at your office, you can work it out.
Mm.
You only need public charging along the highway.
And if you buy those big wall boxes, you can just leave it charging overnight.
True, that's at home.
Yeah.
But if you live in a condo and your condo doesn't have enough charging, you see, like now maybe you have two plug-in hybrids in the condo, you have two chargers. But once this gets moving, you might need 10, 12, 14.
Yeah.
You can't install in your bay.
Yeah.
Now, the second part of it is APs, approved permits.
Yes, the big, huge issues.
Let's be realistic, it's not going to end. APs will continue. Grey importers will continue. The business will continue to flourish, but the margins are going to get skinnier. I am sure the government will introduce tighter controls for taxation to make the margins skinnier. So will the new AP holders have an advantage over the older ones who have already established their business? Their properties are free, their showrooms are free because they've bought the properties.
Yeah.
The new guys need to renovate and everything else. So this is going to be quite tricky to watch in the next couple of years.
The AP issue has always been very, very tricky because it's already so ingrained in our automotive landscape, right?
Yes.
And one thing I kept thinking about was how much this affects the car manufacturers that are selling here directly.
A lot.
A lot, right?
A lot. Okay, take for example, very simple, easiest, Range Rover. The amount of grey Range Rovers that come in, I think it's 10 to 1 against the new ones that are sold.
Wow.
So Jaguar Land Rover Malaysia is not doing too well, just skipping by because why? The grey importers are bringing in. Now, here's the funny story. If you go and buy an ex-factory, say, a Range Rover Evoque, okay, from the UK, you are Jaguar Land Rover Malaysia, you get a special price because you're buying from the factory. And you say you buy it for, say, £30,000. Argument sake, £30,000. Now, 1 year later, which is what an AP holder will do, go and buy a used Range Rover Evoque from the market. It'll probably be around £30,000.
Yeah.
Because the used car market has passed through so many hands to get into the showroom.
Yeah.
And then from the showroom, it's come back down on the depreciation trail after 1 year. It's probably the same price as the ex-factory. The only difference is the brand new Range Rover will pay full tax. The grey importer will pay much less tax. That's why you see the price difference.
Mm.
But that is all going to change with NEP 2020 because the taxation is going to be tighter. This is what I predict.
Well, we'll see that on Friday yes. evening, which we will be covering this whole NEP 2020
yes.
next week when
yes.
we can have a full look at it. But for now, let's do some car launches.
Let's do that.
Yes.
Last week, we didn't mention the Proton X 70 because it was happening as we were
As we were the show, yes.
So it's finally here. You get the dual clutch transmission, an updated engine with a little bit more power and efficiency. So they've changed up a little bit of the trim level. So the mid-level executive version gets you a powered tailgate and ventilated front seats, which is nice. The top line gets a foot sensor on the tailgate, and spend a bit more for the top line, you get a panoramic sunroof.
But there's no longer four-wheel drive.
No longer four-wheel drive.
Nobody needs it.
Yeah.
Nobody's going off-road.
Yep.
Except you.
Exactly. I'm glad you remember.
Behind Tesco. but all across the board, for all the trim levels, they've prices have dropped by at least 4,000 ringgit, which is pretty cool.
Which is good because every other car manufacturer's price is going up. Proton's prices are going down and the spec level is going up.
Yes.
Magic.
We can't complain.
So good one, Proton. But the next car that has been launched and you can pre-order it now is the 2020 Honda Accord. 1.5 litre turbo is the one that apparently is going to come here. 198 horsepower, 260 newton meters of torque, and you get LED lights, park assist, a 360 camera, and Honda sensing. And I'm not sure about the price. What do you know about it?
It's going to be close to 190,000 because every other car manufacturer's price is going up. This car is carrying exactly the same spec as a high-spec Honda CR-V and more.
Yeah.
Engine 1.5 turbo shared across the range. So soon you'll see a lot of Hondas using this engine. And it's a big car. It's long.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of good things about it. The other car that you can now pre-order is the Lexus UX 200. 244,000 ringgit is the starting price. It's the urban line. And if you go all the way to the top, it's 300,000 ringgit for an F-Sport model.
Fully imported.
Of course, Lexus models are very well equipped. And you get... The engine you get in it is a 2-litre naturally aspirated engine with 4 cylinders and a 10-speed CVT gearbox. 169 horsepower and 205 newton meters of torque. As mentioned, it's very well equipped, so you get Lexus premium audio, LCD instrument cluster, dual zone climate control, 8-way leather front seat, and Lexus Safety System Plus. Very nice.
Global launches, I know we have one that we're excited about.
Yes, this one is the 2021 Kia Sorento. It's absolutely gorgeous, I think.
I'm not taken by the looks.
Really?
No.
I quite like it.
You quite like it?
Yeah.
It reminds me of the old Escalades, the shape.
Yeah.
It looks very American.
Yeah, it does, right? Yeah.
It's a very, I think it's a more approachable look than the old one. It has a nice shape, and it apparently is the most high-tech vehicle that Kia has ever created. They didn't actually reveal about the tech yet.
They told us it's got quilted seats.
Quilted seats in a Kia. Imagine
that. And a colour leather steering wheel.
So, if you think about it, the interior and what they've provided, and also the rear lamp cluster, looks a little bit like a Bentley.
Just a little bit. I mean, they've even got the rotary shifter like a Jag.
Yes.
So, I don't know if it pops up or down, but anyway, it's pretty cool. Specifications, it's 80 kilograms lighter than the old one. You get a new 2.2-liter diesel with roughly the same power as previously. You get an 8-speed dual clutch transmission gearbox, which similar to the Proton. Right.
same, but very different.
And you can, in the US and Europe, you can buy the car with a 2.5-liter turbo with 275 horsepower. There's also a hybrid version, but they haven't released so much details about that.
On that note, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few moments here on Cruise Control, where we'll be talking all about the Mini Clubman Cooper S Pepper White. It's not her name. It's the colour they've chosen. Cruise Control here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control. My name is Rich Bradbury, in the studio with Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my.
Selamat petang.
That's him. And Arif Ruz, the man with the news. Say hello.
Hello.
We've spoken to you about the man, the myth, the legend of Carlos Ghosn. We spoke about that. We briefly touched on the nap the NAP 2020, what to expect from that. That's coming out next Friday, of course. We'll have some more information.
This Friday.
More information about that, of course, will be on our next show when we know more about it. A couple of car launches we gave you. But now it's time for me to feel a little bit homely. Let's speak about the Mini Clubman S. Mm.
And as you know, the Mini Clubman is still made in Britain.
Yeah, whatever.
Thank you, Richard. your relatives are building it. But it's a German product.
Yes.
It's owned by BMW. Mm-hmm. And what is unique about the Clubman is this. The Mini Clubman actually is not a new model. The original Mini, the Rover Mini, was a two-door, small little car. Then one day, some guy in Britain said, you know, we need to deliver milk, we need to deliver malt, we need to deliver groceries, we need something a bit bigger.
Stick a back on it.
Stick a wagon back on it. So they extended the wheelbase, same engine. They gave it. I remember there was a wooden body version,
yeah,
which the British Post used, the milkman used.
That's right, yes.
You know, some of them came over to Malaysia. People modified it. People kept it. People restored it. Lovely little car, but it still remained a two-door. Now, what happens? Come to modern day. In 2008, Mini decided to resurrect the Clubman name. But they gave it three doors. So it had two doors in front and one door in the rear. But right at the back, it had two doors. So it had five doors to open the back to give it that old wagon kind of feel. But if you lived in a country where it was right-hand drive, the door opens on the wrong side.
Mm.
So you open on the roadside. So it was a bit of a funny vehicle. It didn't sell too well, but it was a fun little car. Now comes a proper four-door plus two-door in the rear Mini Clubman. And if you look at it, it's no longer Mini. It's very long.
Because it's maxi.
It's maxi. But it's not really maxi because a lot of men said, you know, men like things that are long. They wanted things to get longer. They like things to
stop,
be longer.
Stop.
So Mini said, I'll give you a longer car. I'll make it longer and wider so that you will enjoy it, you know? So here comes the new Mini Clubman. Now, first look at it. It's a regular two-door that's been squashed and stretched.
Yeah.
Okay? So the back is, of course, the Clubman because you see the two doors. But from the side, it looks a bit squashed. It looks like, you know, some Godzilla came and just, you know, stepped on it a little bit and, you know, it looks
like,
flatter.
Like what happens when you press the top of a cake, right?
Yes.
It just goes blah.
Yes. Now, if you look at the Countryman is more in proportion, I think, because why? It sits a little bit higher. The roof line is a bit different. This one looks too squashed. But the surprising thing is when you get into this car, it's actually quite spacious. The exterior looks like that. And I think it's because of the greenhouse and the wheels that are too large. But anyway, you get inside this Mini. It came out in November last year. So there's actually some revisions to the dashboard, the look and feel in the interior. But the center console, that big round dial is still there. The Mini cluster meter is still there. The mood lighting, you know, the night glow on the door handles. Everything is still there. The comfortable seats. But everywhere you look in the car, the British flag is there to remind you in the car, on the headrest, on the ISOFIX seat points.
You know why, right? It's because we've left the EU. Yeah. Brexit's happened. We have to put our flag now wherever we can.
On the B pillars. It's everywhere, the British flag.
I think this was the trim that they called Mini Yours, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you get to customize your Mini.
Oh, I see.
According to your specification.
And somebody chose to put the English flag on it.
Yes.
No, and that's the package.
Oh, that's the package.
It comes with that. And the rear lamps also has the English flag on it.
What on earth?
You know? So it's great. It just reminding people, oh, we're English. Anyway, driving the car.
Because we all talk like that.
Driving the car, it's still a Mini. It handles well. It's fun. It can be a bit jiggly on our roads, but I think that's because of the huge wheels and the low-profile tires. For Malaysian roads, they should, you know, downsize the wheel by one level, you know, from 18 to 17. Take away those run-flat tires. Run-flat tires are, of course, BMW thing. And everybody else is trying to follow. But it doesn't make sense on our roads because it's just too harsh. Slightly less wider tires, slightly higher profile, and take away the run flat tires. And this car will be very comfortable on our roads. Now, in total package, this car has got no rival.
That is true.
There's no rival. I mean, even if you take, if the Beetle was still in production, yes, there are some people who talk to, you know, oh, maybe a Mini or a Beetle, but that'll be the two-door Mini. Mm. When you talk about this four-door car, there is no rival at all. This, like, Clubman.
There's only one that I can think of. Even that's not a real one.
Okay.
It's just in terms of size, the CLA wagon.
No.
But that's just too small, and that's not being sold here. So
no, but even if it's sold here, no wagon come close. You know, you can bring an Audi wagon, a VW wagon, a BMW wagon. It'll not have a rival, because when you want to buy a Mini, you don't look at any other car. You just look at which variant of the Mini and whether you can afford it. You know, somebody looking to buy a Mini wants a Mini. Someone looking to buy, say, a BMW 3 Series will not look at a Mini.
Mentioning no names over here.
Exactly. I didn't want to say anything because he drives a BMW 3
yeah,
Series.
Right, right. For the record, I love this car.
Yes.
Really?
I think a lot of people hate it.
I do.
And I don't understand why people do.
I could tell you exactly why.
Yeah, why? Right?
Because it's owned by BMW.
No. That's because you're English.
Yeah. I mean,
it's the last English product.
No. In my mind, you know, when you say the word Mini, you know, and the memory that I have of Minis is that small, beautifully crafted English vehicle.
Yes, with that unique sound.
Unique sound that was nippy around corners, had very small wheels, yes. You know, and was just, you could barely fit in the thing.
Especially your height.
Especially my height, but it was lovable. There was something about it.
Cute.
And it was a lot of people's first car. Now you look at what this has become, and it's almost a parody of what it was.
Yes.
You know, and for me, I think... I don't know, Arif, but, you know, I look at it and I'm like, that is not a Mini.
I mean, I totally agree with you with on every point, yeah. Except the BMW part. The fact that this has 5 seats, 6 doors,
yeah. Yeah.
That open outwards. You know, I didn't grow up much.
Don't you dare.
I didn't grow up in those days. Or I mean, I never really had a proper connection with a Mini that everybody knew. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And this new Mini brand under BMW Group is... It's about being weird. It's about being quirky.
Yeah.
And the fact that everybody hates it because it has 6 doors and it's just...
Got British flags all over it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it's just weird. It's weirdly cool. I think it's fantastic to drive. I don't know, BMW hasn't given me the car yet. But everything about it just fits that profile of, like, I want a wagon. I want something that's small. And I want something cool and quirky.
With Union Jack lights on the back.
Yeah, yes. Totally.
Yeah, but you see, the thing is, it appeals to this generation.
Yeah,
perfectly.
It does.
And you know, if you drive around KL, Klang Valley, you can spot a Mini almost every half an hour.
Mm.
Whether it's the first generation BMW Mini or it's one of the new ones. And think about it, you don't see old people driving it.
Mm.
You see old people, my age group, driving the original Mini and struggling and sweating even with the aircon working, but they are loving it.
Hey, Uncle, widen down your window. Give me half an hour.
They're bouncing around and talking like this. Hello.
And, you know, actually, on that note, having said all of this about the Mini, having driven the Mini Cooper S, the 3-door version,
right.
I don't quite enjoy that as much as I like sitting in this.
Mm.
Because that is like you say, just bouncing
jiggly
around like, oh my God. This Clubman Mini and the Countryman are more comfortable, but gives you that little bit, like, it's kind of fun to drive.
Yes. Mm.
So it's a pretty cool car.
I mean, the original, you were like, what, 3 inches off the ground or something ridiculous?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
It felt like you're driving a go-kart, you go around corners sideways.
Yes.
You know, anyway, enough about that.
Enough. So we drove the car, we loved it, we loved all the little toggle switches, the entertainment, the Harman Kardon stereo system is the business. Very well done. Sound insulation is top-notch. Comfort, still there, even with the jiggly ride. But, you know, I have to take away our Klang Valley badly maintained roads. If you go on a nice, smooth tarmac, this car is designed for family use, no issue. 192 brake horsepower, 280 Newton meters, 7-speed dual clutch
yet
transmission
again
with paddle shifters, 7.2 seconds, 0-100 dash, 228 kilometers top speed. And I think the top speed actually can go faster because it's using a 2-liter engine. It's no longer using a 1.6. But I think they've detuned it to accept, you know, the speed regulations.
Mm.
The price is 298,000. Now,
you see that? Okay.
Richard, it's not for you. It's for RF because he's got the salary to buy it. Now, the thing is, even with this price, the Mini will still sell.
It will, of course.
It'll still sell. And the thing is, this car actually, if you think about it, is the same price, same engine, same spec as a brand new BMW 3 Series.
Mm, yep.
But with the 3 Series, you're getting a car which everyone will go say, oh, new 3 Series, that's fine. But the moment you buy a Mini with the same price, hey, you got Mini! Wow, nice that you Mini! Hey, come, we go for a ride!
You know? You must be fun.
Yes, that's the difference. You're right.
Okay, a quick 5-point inspection.
Yes, sir.
You've already said there are no competitors.
No competitors.
Right.
So case closed.
Move on to number 2. What's good about it?
actually, it ticks all the boxes if you like a car like this. If it, you know, the iconic value, the drive dynamics, the space and everything else. But you must want a Mini to start with. Like for me, the only Mini I want is the original first generation BMW Mini, which came with a 1.6 engine, and it had that quirky old Mini look.
That was the one in the remake of the Italian Job.
Yeah, exactly, so, the first one.
Around 2000, 2001, yes, something like that.
I remember going, the time, early days of my job, I went to Spain to test drive it. I loved it.
Yeah.
Today, it's about 30,000 ringgit. You can buy a second-hand one. But the engine is not so reliable because that wasn't using a BMW engine. But that's what I want, not this one.
All right, what do you think is not so good about it?
That rear doors. totally quirky.
You're not a milkman.
Doesn't make sense. You know why? I've got two extra hinges to deal with, two extra doors, two extra locking sets. For what?
And they don't open by themselves, do they?
No.
So you still have to pull both of them.
And it, you know, can
oh,
you...
Oh, no, wait. And the other detail is you can only open one side first.
One at a time. One
before
at a time.
The other.
Yes. So, and you have to close one at a time.
Like a kitchen cabinet.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, my younger son was so... fascinated because first time he's seeing a car like this. Mm. So you open one, he said, why can't I? I said, oh, you have to open it like this. And then he put it back and then he didn't click it in. So we got in the car and we started driving and the doors opened.
Yeah.
So, you know, little things you got to learn about the car. But, you know, I just see no point in having those doors. Mm.
So do you still consider this a Mini?
No. I do not consider it a Mini because I'm a true blue car nut. I've put my own true blue car nut hat on it. But at my age group, nobody's buying this car.
Mm.
So they've designed it for another generation and they are buying this car. So I'm the wrong person to answer this question.
I want to add one question on top of the last one, which is, you know, they have the Mini Cooper 5-door.
Yes.
What is the difference between the both? Like, I mean, they would exactly have the same space, right?
Same space, I suppose. In fact, this will have less space because you've got two doors to deal with. You know, and you got extra hinges at the side.
Yeah.
But honestly, it's just a few point something of a cubic meter. But end of the day, you buy this car because you just want to tell people, I got a Clubman, I got extra two doors, I want to show it off to you.
Final question. The price, 299,000 ringgit. And as you mentioned just now, it's about the same price as the 3 Series, which means it's the same price as an S60 T8,
yes.
Mercedes C300, Audi A4. Is this Clubman any more special than the others?
In terms of performance and handling, no. But like I said, it's iconic. It's something you buy to make a statement. It's something you buy to get notice. It's like buying red shoes. Do you really need red shoes?
No.
No.
And on that note, we'll wrap up. Nice segue there, Daniel.
I think we spoke, in these past 2 weeks, we spoke a lot about everything other than cars.
Other than cars, yeah. But that's what keeps people tuning in and getting hold of us via our Instagram.
Which is at BFM Cruise Control.
If you missed any part of the show, we spoke about Nissan's wild ride, what to expect from the NAP 2020, and of course, the glowing review of the Mini Clubman S.
Yes, sir.
Here on Cruise Control. We'll be back same time, same place next week here on BFM. From me, Rich Bradbury, Daniel Fernandez, of course, Arif Ruse. This has been Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.